joint work with Silvio Micali and Rafael Paz. I finished preparing the talk 10 minutes ago. I haven't had the chance to look at the slides yet. Let's go over them together. So inspired by Anna, let's compare crypto in the 20th century with crypto in the 21st century. So it seems like in the 20th century, crypto went in the direction, starting from protocols, going towards definition. people identified that it's very important to...
Protocols and definitions, but they came closer to each other.
They came closer to each other, but actually, seriously, if you look like at notions like zero knowledge and stuff, first they have the protocol, then they define zero knowledge. And that's not the only example. Also, secure to-party computation, first they have the protocol. To this day, they're working on the definition. But the issue was, it wasn't clear to everybody that the protocol should come coupled with the definition. And with the start of the 21st century, people realized that definition is important. And somehow, definitions became more and more important until, to some extent, people forgot that after coming up with the definition, you have to come up with a protocol. So what I talk about in this talk is a new definition, which we call input indistinguishable computation. It's a definition for secure two-party computation in the malicious model. The new thing about it is that it doesn't refer to simulation, to the simulation paradigm, at least not explicitly.
But so, just a second. So it's information theoretic definitions. They also talk about simulations.
Yes, but not for two-party computation.
Ah, right.
And the inspiration, as you can imagine, maybe, is witnessing indistinguishability. We'll talk about it extensively. Of course, we will come up. We'll come with a new protocol. The features of the protocol is that it can achieve this security under many concurrent executions, without assuming any trusted setup, and assuming standard complexity assumptions. No unusual complexity assumptions. And I want to emphasize here that even though it's not clear from this sequence of events, our motivation can be viewed as more protocol oriented. We sort of have a protocol. You can think of it. We have a protocol. You'll see the protocol later. And we believe that it's perhaps it could be good under many concurrent executions. And we want to see what kind of the definition it can satisfy. And of course, the stronger the definition we come up with, the better.
But there is some meaningfulness there.
We'll see. We do not achieve the Holy Grail. At least we do not claim that we achieve the Holy Grail. Not yet. And even if we claim that we achieved the Holy Grail, we wouldn't have been the first to achieve the Holy Grail.
Just be clear.
Okay.
What is the Holy Grail of cryptography?
It's like the Holy Grail. It's undefined.
It's a fuzzy notion.
Yeah. But one thing, in accordance with tradition of cryptography, I don't have to define the Holy Grail in order not to achieve it.
So, are we making fun of the audience?
Okay, so at the risk of stretching the obvious to the audience, I will remind us of the crypto methodology. So, what do we do? What is our job? We define security, and by defining security, I mean what it means to break the scheme. What it means for the adversary to break the scheme. Then we specify the adversary in terms of computational power and what access it sets to the scheme. You can imagine what that means. And then we construct the scheme and prove that if you break it according to the definition that we gave, you could contradict some assumption about the hardness, some computational problem typically. And after we do that, we need to convince the user or our colleagues, that the definition is meaningful, exactly what Tal was bothered by, that the adversary we consider is realistic. not like a joker that doesn't even look at the messages of the protocol or something like that. And that the assumption we rely on is reasonable. And of course, reasonable depends on the interpretation of the viewer, but we all have this notion we agree on what is real, reasonable and what is not. And of course, this is a delicate balance. And to reach the balance, the methodology said first, show that you can achieve the definition, you don't care about the efficiency at all, then you work on the probability, the efficiency, and weakening the hardest assumption, provided that you came up with a solution that assumes something very strong, and then see if you can satisfy a stronger definition, unless you achieve the holy grail, in which case you don't have to satisfy. Sorry. So let's go to the first example of this methodology.
Which is 20th century should be element one.
That's 20th century. Okay.
Oh,
this is so. This is so 80s. This is very 80s. This picture. So we compare between a real execution of a protocol and ideal execution of the protocol, where Alice and Bob feed the. Their inputs to a trusted party, who computes the function with them. And I want to say that for every real world adversary, any attack that you can mount here, there exists an attack you can mount here, since here you cannot mount any attack. Then you cannot mount any attack here. And this is very nice. And the theorem about this notion of security is that assuming oblivious transfer protocols, every efficient two-party computation can be securely computed according to this definition. So the questions that we need to ask now, once the feasibility has been established, is whether the definition is meaningful. And what is the answer? The answer is yes. It's as meaningful as it gets, at least as far as I can think of. Because there are no attacks here, and the implication, the logical implication, is that there are no attacks here. Is the adversary realistic? Well, it depends on the setting and on the scenario that you consider. Of course, we will be talking about scenarios where you can run many protocols at the same time, in which case this adversary is not realistic and we'll have to adjust the definition. And is that sound reasonable? Yes, if you believe that factoring is discrete log hard. I don't think there are many other assumptions that imply the theorem. I don't know. I've never seen anybody claim that. Okay, so also lattices. Now, since we said we need to adjust to a more realistic definition, we switch to talk about many adversaries that run many protocols concurrently, both in the real world and the ideal world. They can corrupt Bob's. They can also corrupt Alice's. And same entities are corrupted in the ideal world, and again we compare the execution of a real world adversary to an ideal world adversary. And now again we ask the question whether the definition is meaningful, assuming that this is the kind of attack we want to consider and we want to handle. The answer is yes. And also the adversary, same thing. Is the assumption reasonable? It could be, but we don't have any protocol that satisfies this definition. So there's no comment about that. And here, I don't know if you noticed the title, I bundled together here the notions of universal composability, of general composition, and self-composition. Yuda has shown that they are roughly equivalent. And it's more convenient for me to talk about a definition that incorporates many executions within the definition. Unlike universal composability that talks about a single execution, and any protocol that satisfies it is guaranteed to be composable.
You mean self-composition?
For me, it's most convenient to talk about self-composition. This diagram also depicts the general composition scenario in some sense, if you allow different protocols running at the same time. And we have sweeping possibility results here by starting with the kinetic Cauchy-Levitz and Lindahl and works of Lindahl that for most interesting function without specifying what are these functions, these definitions cannot be achieved, period. So what people do, they resort to set up assumptions. They weaken the adversary in some sense. They allow everybody to use some common reference string or something of the sort, or a public key or a public key infrastructure. And we have several theorems showing that under this kind of set of assumptions, you can achieve this kind of security, whatever that this security means. So now you have to ask yourself whether this is meaningful, whether is this realistic. It is to some extent. It depends who you ask. I'm not going to get into this. I just want to get halfway through the talk, not...
I mean, but the honest majority might also be, even if you don't
yes.
have common random strings,
yes.
honest majority definitely is something
yeah, yeah.
reasonable.
Yes, so yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Another alternative is to give up the trusted setup and talk about super polynomial time simulation. So the definition is essentially the same as the traditional definition. Only here we require that for every polynomial time, probabilistic polynomial time adversary B in the real world, there exists a probabilistic, possibly super polynomial time adversary in the ideal world. So we relax here the requirement and allow the simulator in the ideal world to run for longer. And we have theorem by Manoj and Amit, and Barak and Amit, Boaz Barak and Amit, that assume its sub-exponential hardness. And of this transfer, every efficient two-party function can be securely computed, one could say, with a quasi-polynomial time simulator. I'm not getting now into the subtleties and the differences between the Baccarat and Sahai result and the Barak-Sahai result, but you can think of both of them as being cast in this kind of setting, where you have a super-polynomial time simulator in the ideal. And now, of course, the question, we have the three key questions. And the first one is, of course, we have relaxed here the requirement of the simulator. The simulator here has to run a super polynomial time. But I claim that, not only me, many claim that the definition is still meaningful in many cases, depending on the function that you compute. There are many functions for which giving the adversary more time doesn't change anything about the security, the resulting security. Any function for which is information theoretic, in some sense, giving the adversary more time, unbounded time will not help him in breaking the scheme even in the real world. Is the adversary realistic? Well, there are a few caveats in these results. In the Barak-Sahai, one problem with their solution is that they assume that the adversary, well, actually the executions of the protocols, the security parameters of the protocol are tied together very tightly. You cannot allow much variation in the security parameters of the protocol. If you allow, for example, somebody to run with a protocol of size 1 million bits, and one other user to run with a protocol of 1,000 bits, then you might the security guarantee might collapse. You might not have security guarantee, and this is a serious limitation, of course. So we do have a solution, but still we have this big problem. The problem is that if the difference between the security parameters of different executions of the protocol is large, okay, then there's no security guarantee. And the reason technically is because the way the simulators here are executed is by exhaustively breaking some key. So if you let the simulators break a key of 1 billion bits, it implicitly breaks the security of some other protocol with 1,000 bits. Okay? So this is a drawback, and you need a lot of coordination between the security parameters. The Prabhakara-Sahai protocol suffered from the drawback that the assumption that they rely on is not reasonable, at least in my taste. It's very non-standard, and it's very hard to digest.
So it doesn't collapse into 1,000 bits. It collapses altogether.
There's no security guarantee.
No security guarantee.
Yeah, they cannot say anything about it. But still, super polynomial time simulation is an interesting notion. despite these drawbacks. I mentioned drawbacks of the solutions. I didn't mention drawbacks of the approach. So it is a meaningful security guarantee for many functionalities. Like I said, it handles a realistic adversary, the one who runs many sessions concurrently. And it still has the potential of being realized. Nothing that I've said so far doesn't say that it is not possible to realize super polynomial time simulation without running into the drawbacks of the current solutions.
But don't you lose the composability?
No. I'm talking about a notion that considers composability. And coming up with such a protocol is still an open problem. This might be the next to best, I don't know, holy grail. Because it's really an appealing notion, and very elegant and very clean, and it's pretty close to what we envisioned in the 80s when we were in kindergarten. At least some of us, not including me. What we do in this work, we give a definition that can be realized under standard assumptions, without constraints of security parameters, and in face of unbounded number of concurrent executions. This is the definition. Okay, the definition is that any protocol is secure. It can be satisfied under assumption. It has no constraint on the security parameter, and it's composable. It's even composable. You will see the definition. You will decide for yourself if it's meaningful or not. In which cases it's meaningful or not. And also decide for yourself if it could lead to unbounded simulation, sort of what I was talking here, eventually. Not yet, we don't know yet whether it implies unbounded simulation, but maybe there's the potential. And I emphasize unbounded simulation here because the name super polynomial time simulation suggests that the simulator needs to have a running time. Okay, so for this definition to be meaningful, you don't care about the running time. It could be uncomputable or whatever, what the simulator has to do. It had got to be double exponential. For the super polynomial time, for the unbounded simulation kind of definition, you give the adversary whatever power he wants in the ideal world, it doesn't change anything in the meaningfulness of the definition, at least for information theoretic functionalities. And it's something that might be confusing.
Instead, it's open. You don't know whether your definition implies or not. It's measured. The answer is probably no, but it's not true.
I didn't understand the question. So
you know if your definition implies. You said that it's open. Whether not sure understood what you said.
It's open to come up. It's open to come up with a protocol that satisfies the standard definition.
Okay, but do you know whether your definition? Can you show that your definition does not imply?
No, I do.
I suspect the point against its meaningfulness, right? You cannot show that it
yes.
does not imply meaningful definition.
Yes. I didn't claim. But you will see the definition. It will be something as such, if you would use it or not.
It's
argument.
It's something that can be solved, right? We have two definitions. We're almost always able to tell whether one implies the other, right? And it's an issue.
Unless it's a definition of concurrent composition. In which case, it's so complicated that it's no evidence for anything that you cannot show. It doesn't mean anything that you cannot show. Oh, seriously. So what is this notion that I was motivating so much? We call it input-based distinguishable computation. If you think about the ideal real kind of definition, there are three main properties, intuitive properties that you want to capture. They're not stated explicitly, but this is what you want it to imply. At least that's the minimum that you want, is correctness, meaning that the protocol actually computes a function of what you want. Input independence, meaning that the inputs of the parties do not depend on each other. And privacy, which is intuitively the notion that you don't learn anything about the input of the other party in the protocol. Of course, the ideal redefinition might imply even more than that. Implies also that you cannot factor your neighbor's public key, even though you didn't even run with your neighbor the protocol. But this would be the minimum that you would require. What we do, we sort of state these properties explicitly and replace the notion of privacy, the vague notion of privacy, with an explicit notion that we call input indistinguishability. So consider an honest party player A with input X playing a two-party protocol with a malicious B star with input Y, and we assume that only one party gets the input, just not to run into issues of fairness, and it's B star, it's the malicious player. And the intuition is that the input indistinguishability requirement is that all inputs of A, after the execution of the protocol, all inputs of A that are compatible with the output of B at the end of the protocol, it's not well defined, we'll define it in a second and more precise way, they're all equally likely in light of what you saw from the protocol execution. Okay? You cannot distinguish between any two possible input of A that lead to your own output.
What happens if there's only one X like that?
Okay, we'll talk about it in a second. It's a good question. It's a great question. These are the cases where we have no meaning. So in other words, to distinguish between x0 and x1, whether A used x0 or x1, B star must use a Y star, an input Y star, so that the only way for B star to distinguish between x0 and x1, B star has to use a Y star that splits between, that distinguishes between them through the input-output relation of the function. This is sort of something unavoidable anyway, because the purpose of the protocol is to reveal the output of the function. So,
I guess the RPC framework, the environment provides inputs, and the inputs could be correlated. So I'm not sure when you say input independence, you mean you don't learn anything beyond the additional correlation of the environment?
So let's talk it when we get to the details. Maybe it will be clearer, and then you can ask.
So when you say must use Western, you said it is.
So let's wait for the detail. It's not this is certainly not the definition. It's just sort of a high level motivation. And then if you have the questions, we have to answer. Yes.
Is it okay if B star is able to give some probabilistic thing about the two inputs, even though he cannot say that X not or X one is used?
No. Any two inputs that lead to the same output are equally likely, as far as B star is concerned. But let's see the detail. So first of all, nobody asked what is this Y star, and why on earth would B star need to have an input? Okay, because B star is a malicious party, and what is an input of a malicious party? You can certainly ignore the input it is giving to him in the beginning, and then it's our duty to define what do we mean about the malicious party's input. And the way we will define it very soon is that Y star is determined as a function of the view of B star. This is sort of what Luca was asking, I think. The view of B star totally determines this value, Y star, and it will be sort of a reference point for us. You can think of it, for those of you who know how these protocols work, the typical protocol, you could think of it as the value committed to by B star in the beginning of the protocol.
So this function is
about
computational about in function?
Which function?
In.
Yes,
function.
It's not necessarily efficiently computed. Yes.
So you know at some point how it relates to the definition of like Mikhailov and
I didn't plan to, but we might. I don't know. as Amos pointed out, this doesn't give us much guarantee in case the function is one-to-one. Because, of course, a protocol just sends X satisfies the definition, and it's not so good, as you can imagine. And this is a similar problem. We see a similar problem in the definition of witness indistinguishability, which is actually the inspiration for this definition. And I actually want to go over witness indistinguishability for a second, both to remind us and to see the differences, where we have to differ from witness indistinguishability. So witness indistinguishability is a property of an interactive proof. on the prover and the interactive proof. So we have an interaction between the prover and possibly malicious verifier. We let view W denote the verifier's view when the prover uses a witness W. And the witness indistinguishability property is that for any V star, malicious V star, and for any two possible witnesses for the statement, two views of the verifier with the corresponding witnesses are indistinguishable. And the nice thing about witness indistinguishability is that it's well behaved under concurrent composition. The meaningfulness of the notion, of course, is debatable. It depends on the context. The usefulness is not debatable. It's very useful. But in some cases, it's good enough. We know that as a fact in the context of interactive proofs. What are the differences between the witness indistinguishability scenario and the input indistinguishability scenario? Here are the main high-level differences. In the interactive proof scenario, the verifier has no input, whereas in the secure two-party setting, it has. The output is just, in the interactive setting, it's just accept-reject, whereas here it's a function of both inputs, and this gives a lot of control to B star. In particular, you can choose a Y star that can distinguish between two inputs, and you have to take this into account when you define. And here's another difference. Typically, when you talk about, at least when you talk about non-trivial kind of interactive proofs, the input of P, the witness used by P, and this is an important distinction actually, the witness used by P to run the protocol is hard, sort of hard. We think of it as something that is hard to compute given the statement. Whereas here, it's not necessarily true. For example, given Y and the output, it might be very easy to come up for A. So let's be a little bit more specific about this mysterious implicit input function. It's a function which we denote by in sub B. It's defined on B star's view on the interaction. And let's think that the view depends only on the input X of A and on the randomness of A. Let's say B star is deterministic and ignore its own input Y, without the loss of generality, just to make notation simpler. And the requirement that we require is that it's well defined on all possible views. Okay, on any possible view, any possible messages, and the randomness for B star, the value of int sub B is well defined. Again, if you think of commitment, at least a statistically binding commitment, or perfectly binding commitment, it's true. It's well defined. Given the commitment string, you can determine exactly what's the value inside. And the notation that we use just in the SQL is that for any B star and for any possible X, the Y star is sampled according to this distribution. Okay, the view of X is a random variable that depends on the coin tosses of the honest party. And the outcome of input sub B is just a function applied to this random variable. And it's also a random variable.
And you don't require polynomial time computability of this function?
No. Yes. It's a very important point to emphasize. It's been asked before.
Otherwise, it would have been equivalent to the simulability.
Maybe. Maybe. We didn't. We don't know yet. We've tried to do that. So actually, the reason we don't know, this might be true for the standalone, but if you run many concurrent executions, we don't know this. We suspect it's not true, actually. And the reason we don't require that it's computable in polynomial time, the input function, is because we want to come up with as minimal definition as we can. We go in the opposite direction of everybody. Don't try to capture as many features as you can. We try to come up with a succinct definition and see whether what we came up with is still meaningful despite giving up on many requirements. That's the main reason why we give up on the efficient computability of input. But if you look at the protocols, the GMW protocol, for those of you who know them, then the parties commit and prove that they know the value. So it seems like it should be computable in polynomial time given the view of B star. Another requirement, which is sort of new, is that the protocol has an output delivery message. What is that? This is sort of a round a stage in a protocol where the implicit input function is well defined from the view so far, but no information about the output has been revealed yet. Let's keep it at this normal level. If you think about the existing protocol, it is satisfied, but not by. Okay, so he must have forgotten because he emphasized that it's new. Okay, good, good. And it is, and actually, it is implied by the ideal real definition. If you think the ideal real requires the parties to hand out an input to the trusted party and then obtain an output, for this to happen, the input has to be defined before the output. So intuitively, at least at an intuitive level, it is implied.
This is inferred that you feel it really means it's not.
Yes.
This is per execution, the input will be defined, and the real idea is not there.
The real idea is no explicit mention of these things. Yes. Especially if you're, yeah, the concurrent setting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, is an intuition for why you want this input function to be well defined. You want to be able to. Some sense extract something from the adversary without rewinding.
No. I want the implicit input to be well defined in order for my definition to be well defined. Okay, it's meaningless if the input function is not well defined.
You only require that the implicit input function be computable given sort of access to the adversary's code and not necessarily a particular view or something. You know, you could imagine something that basically makes you go remind the adversary of it, like if there's a proof of knowledge.
Yeah.
Right? So it's so clear to me that in fact you need this function of the view in order to make sure.
So this reminding issue, now think when you run many sessions concurrently.
That's what I'm saying, is that it's exactly that if you define, if you allow sort of rewinding, if you allow me to rewind and stuff in order to define the...
Okay, if you require rewinding in order to define this, yes.
Right. So the point is, I guess what I'm saying, or what I'm asking slash saying, is it the case that the reason for having this implicit input function is not have a definition that makes sense, because this is somehow crucial to being able to easily concurrently compose things.
No.
Okay. I'll just shut up.
Makes sense, though, right?
Secure function of the input-output, or can you capture a reactive?
No, we're not that ambitious. We'll be talking about really a very restricted setting. You have secure two-party computation, the same protocol executed many times concurrently.
So with this implicit definition of B star's input, so it's conceivable that there's some functionality where, you know, if B star's input has some funny correlation with A's input, then the function spits out A's input. And because you don't, you know, because it's...
Input. Let's talk about it now. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, we haven't gotten into the real details, so...
Yeah.
Maybe if you have the question later.
Okay.
So, here's the high-level definition, okay? So we have three requirements. Completeness is a straightforward requirement. I will not waste any time about it. You just want the protocol to compute. Yes, sir.
Do you require that when everyone's honest, the input function actually gives you the actual input?
So this is something I skipped in the previous slide because I didn't have time. I thought I didn't have this consistency.
Okay.
So we implicitly require that the implicit input function, which is implicit in the ideal real, has this consistency property that the honest party gets the value of the function applied to the implicit applied to the Y star. So So this is a straightforward requirement. The input independence requirement is also very natural. You want that for any adversary, for any two possible values used by A, by the honest party, the value of the implicit input function does not depend on them. Okay? And you just require it by saying that the distributions are indistinguishable for any two such values. Then you have the input indistinguishability requirement, which is roughly like this. In a second, I'll show you how to state it really formally. For any adversary, for any two possible input, think of the random variable that takes the value of the implicit input function, and you require that B star can only distinguish whether X0 was used or X1 was used when the value of the function distinguishes between them when applied to the implicit input value, and that B received the output in the protocol. Okay? This seems like a sort of a syntactic requirement, but it's necessary. So if B hasn't received the output in the protocol, it cannot distinguish, period. Okay, so it is only the output of the protocol who can make B star distinguish between these two values, if they're consistent. This is, of course, very tricky to formalize. It's not so simple. It's not like you can condition on values given in advance. I will not get into it. If you're interested, you can talk with him later. And the way we actually formalize all of what I've said is by bundling together input indistinguishability and independence. We require that for any adversary and for any two input, the outputs of the following two experiments are indistinguishable. Experiment 0 and experiment 1, where experiment I is defined in the following way. You sample the view of B star in an execution with A on input X sub I. Okay? You determine the value of the implicit input function, and if the output is true, if you reach the output and the values are distinguished, you output bottom, or in other words, no guarantee. Okay? There's no guarantee. Otherwise, if the output hasn't distinguished between the values, you output the actual value of the implicit input and the message, the view of the B star. And what you would require is that no matter whether you run here with X0 or X1, these two random variables, which either consist of this or of this, are indistinguishable. And this sort of captures input independence simultaneously with input indistinguishability.
How is it? Any sense of the fact that the condition that B star got an output?
How do you make sense in what sense? No, I didn't understand. How do you know whether you got the output or not?
Yeah.
So this experiment, it doesn't have to be conducted in polynomial time, first of all. And second of all, when I say output equals true, it means that if you pass the output release round that I defined before, it's a syntactic, totally syntactic kind of thing.
This is the output of the
yes. I do not require that his output is anything well defined.
Okay.
It's a syntactic thing.
Are you sending it single round, single message, or can it be?
So for simplicity, let's assume it is a single message. Okay. It actually might even be important for composition, for independence of inputs between different executions. Yes. And given the message of the commitment, given the view in particular, yes.
But if the commitment is a competition finding,
yes, then.
Then what's the distribution of Y star?
Then obviously I will not be able to show that the protocol satisfies this definition.
So it's not only set in finding.
Yeah.
But what does distribution of Y star mean?
What the distribution mean? This?
Yeah.
It depends on the coin tosses of A. And on the input of A, used by A. I didn't put it here explicitly, but...
it's not like given a view of B, you can extract, you mean you know a Y star.
So this thing is not a computation, this sort of a
matrix. Okay, but sure, but even it's a function, given the view of B star,
yes.
If the commitment is directly binding, then you know a Y star.
Yes.
what you're saying here is that you're going to take this over the random test of A to get the distribution of Y.
So the randomness that defines the output of this experiment is the randomness of A without loss of generality. If I understood correctly,
the question. But the function in V star, is it a deterministic function or does it describe it?
No, it's totally deterministic. Yes, totally deterministic. Yes.
So the randomness occurs in the sort of first.
Here, inside the view.
Right. Oh, I see. Okay.
Yes.
So that is a bit confusing.
So the whole experiment is totally information theoretic and
yes.
The indistinguishability between the two computations.
You could, of course, ask what happens if you require this to be in polynomial time, but I don't have an answer yet. Whether it's more meaningful, in what sense is it more meaningful? So just to give you an example, because it's very abstract, this thing, let's think what it means for the Oblivious transfer functionality. Okay, so the function of Oblivious transfer, Alice is given two secrets, Bob is given a choice bit, and the output is S sub C, the secret of his choice. So X equals S0, S1, and Y equals C, or Y star equals some sort of C. What does the input independence property at the high level? Is that the value of the choice bit is computationally independent of the values of the strings to be chosen. And remember, we're still talking about standalone here, which means that we'll never get past one quarter of the talk. Input is indistinguishability entails that given S sub C star, meaning the string that corresponds to the choice bit, the implicit choice bit of B star as output, and the view that is generating using S0, S1, the other input could take any values. Why?
Indistinguishable, not
computationally could take any at a high level. Meaning that suppose S sub C star was S0, then any possible value of S1 will map to this S0 under this function. So it sort of could take any two values that you put in here will yield an indistinguishable view. And now it's up to you to decide whether it's meaningful or not.
There have been several works that use a non-simulation based definition for OT, like the works on two round OT and so on.
Okay.
This turn out to be equivalent to the
so,
definition?
So it would have been great, but this work suffered exactly from this shortcoming. Is that it's not clear that the inputs, actually these inputs, are independent from the choice bit in this protocol. So they certainly cannot satisfy this definition. So it rules out these two round OTs. So, yeah.
Yours is stronger.
Yes. It still has this, what did I do?
It's not clear or it doesn't have?
No, it doesn't satisfy. No, it doesn't. There's no implicit input in this program.
No,
one side, what? Talking to me or to you? Okay.
Okay,
I promise you concurrency. The nice thing about this definition is that once you figure you like figured out how it is in the standalone, all you need to do for concurrency is to add a bar over the inputs. Okay, and consider a communication model where the adversary runs many executions. So it's a simple extension.
Well, you get into all these issues where the input is defined as a function of the previous round, blah, blah, blah. So
yes.
You're saying that it's all handled in this definition?
No. What I'm saying, and this is part of the point I'm trying to make, until now we had, as an interpreter of how meaningful a definition is, we had no burden. We didn't even have to think. The idea real, it's meaningful, you don't even have to think what it means. What I'm saying here, in order to have a protocol that satisfies it at all, I move the burden to the viewer, to the observer, okay? I don't fully move the burden to the observer, but I say It's up to you to interpret if it's good enough or not for your purposes. I'm giving up the meaningfulness, sort of, but not entirely, as hoping. I'm not like saying that any protocol is it. I even ruled out two protocols.
That could be done in the upper.
So just I want to emphasize that I already said it, that we're considering basic occurrence, and notice that we're talking about two fixed input sequences. Of course, one could think of an extension where the x's and the y's depend on the executions, but for simplicity, I'm not talking about that. And this definition talks about like Alice, Bob, one Alice running with many Bobs, or many Alices running with many Bobs. You can extend it at the cost of a slight complication to handle arbitrary corruptions, like we saw before. Some of the Alices are corrupted, some of the Bobs are corrupted. The way to do it, you just assign identities to each player. An identity meaning the name written on the forehead, and a role in the protocol, Alice or Bob. And then you guarantee security depending on these identities. What do we know about the composability? Here I want to emphasize that unlike witness indistinguishability and universal composability, a protocol that is standalone input indistinguishability is not necessarily concurrent input indistinguishable. The analogy here you can think of is zero knowledge. Protocol that is standalone zero knowledge is not necessarily concurrent zero knowledge. However, there exists a definition of concurrent zero knowledge, and there exist protocols that satisfy this definition. And the problem here is the potential malleability of the protocol. This is the key problem. Think of a protocol. Suppose you have a protocol that doesn't even consider malleability as an issue, and you could think of B star just taking the commitment sent by Alice and copying it in the next execution, in a different execution, and already created dependencies between his inputs and Alice's inputs. So this is something you must address, and any solution in it will have to take issues of malleability into consideration, and what is nice is that sort of ensuring non-malleability of the protocol is enough to satisfy this definition, and this is what I meant when I said that our thing is protocol-driven. We have non-malleable zero-knowledge protocols. We ask, what happens if you compile the YAL protocol with a non-malleable zero-knowledge protocol instead of an ordinary zero-knowledge protocol? What kind of definition you can satisfy? And this is the definition you can satisfy, maybe even stronger. We don't know. Maybe this protocol satisfies even unbounded simulation, as far as I know it's possible. And
what
the main theorem...
What you just said is that your protocol is YAL with non-malleable.
Yes. Yes. This is our protocol. Yes.
And which non-malleable zero knowledge do you use?
The one by Rafael and myself. We'll talk about it in a second. And the theorem is that assuming that there exists Raptor-Clough permutation, then any function can be computed in a concurrent input indistinguishable way. And let's skip that. We don't have much time. The high-level idea, as we just mentioned, you take Yao's protocol, secure against honest but curious, you compile it like GMW did, but instead of normal zero knowledge, you use non-malleable zero knowledge protocols, and you don't use them in a modular way. Okay, it's not like if you plug any non-malleable zero knowledge protocol, it works. Our analysis relies on the specific properties of our non-malleable zero knowledge protocol. So it's not like we suggest a recipe here for obtaining input. As far as we know right now, that's the only way to obtain it, using this protocol.
Is it clear which properties you use?
Yes. And another property that we need that is satisfied by Yao's protocol is what Lipinski, Mikhaly, and Shelat call probable determinism, is that once the first message is sent, only one possible, every subsequent message, actually it's not the Yao, it's the Yao compiled with the Alagin W, is that every subsequent message has only one possible continuation within the protocol. And for this to be true, we need to commit the randomness of the YAL protocol using a perfectly binding commitment. This is why we will need the cloth-free permutation to get perfectly binding convention.
And what do you need the provable determinants for?
I doubt that we'll have a remote chance of even getting close to describing why we need it. we let AB denote the resulting protocol. The analysis at a high level. Maybe I'll have a chance to hint. The first level is that the protocol that I just described is secure in the ideal real, under the standard ideal real definition. And this is sort of, you can believe it, because it's the usual protocol, just with a stronger zero-knowledge compiler. The second lemma is that standalone ideal real implies standalone input indistinguishability. Okay, so if you can simulate the protocol, it's also input indistinguishable. The implicit input that we define, you can think of as the value that you feed to the trusted party in the simulation. What it does require is to augment the outputs of the ideal real experiment. This is just an advanced comment, maybe. Also with the input of P star, just for the formalism of having this implication, but it's possible to do it. It relies on this fact that you have this message before which the implicit input is defined and no information about the output is defined. And then any B star that, and distinguisher that break the input independence property are transformed into B double star and this, and actually the same D that break the ideal real. This is pretty standard. The heart of the proof is showing that standalone input indistinguishability for this protocol that I defined, not in general, okay? I just said that in general it's not true, implies concurrent input indistinguishability for the same protocol. Okay, I'll repeat it. If the protocol AB that I defined in the previous slide is standalone input indistinguishable, then it's also concurrent input indistinguishable. How much time do I have? 10 minutes?
You can take 10 minutes, sure.
Thanks. So let me say a couple of words about the proof. After all, the implicit so we were given a standalone protocol, like a proof of the standalone protocol, and we want to prove that it's concurrent input indistinguishable. The implicit inputs, we keep them the same. Think of them as the commitments. The argument will be an interplay between hybrid and simulation. You'll see in a second at the high level what the argument is. And following actually the analysis of my protocol with Rafael, we'll have a non-black box simulation mixed with black box extraction. And maybe we'll get the flavor of this as well. The main tool, which is this non-malleable protocol that I mentioned before, is this notion which we call one-many simulation extractable zero knowledge. So the scenario that we have in mind, it's typically like that in non-malleable, is that you have two parties or many parties interacting through a man-in-the-middle adversary who controls the channel. In this scenario, you have one execution on the left and an unbounded number of concurrent executions on the right. The picture doesn't show it, but they can be interleaved. And each zero knowledge, the instruction of each zero-knowledge protocol depends on the identity of the prover. So the guarantee will hold if all the identities here are different than the identity here. And the identity, you can think of it as this thing that is written on the forehead of every individual player in the world. It's you can think of it as a setup assumption, but I would argue that it's a weak setup assumption. And the requirement is that you can simulate the execution on the left, meaning that for every man in the middle that verifies an interaction of the left and proves many interactions on the right, there exists a standalone prover that doesn't have any interactions on the left, and we still manage to convince on the right with the same probability. And in addition, that you can extract all the witnesses used by this standalone prover at the same time, while simulating on the left. And this is a very useful tool for analyzing non-malleable protocols. This is sort of a technical notion. It's not like it gives us immediately this flavor of what it means. But it's very useful to work. This is as modular as we can get in this kind of proofs, and it gives us a flavor of what you can obtain. And now I'll give just a couple of slides at a high level, because I will not get into details, we also don't have time, why concurrent implies standalone. So in the concurrent, you have many runs of the protocol with Alice on the left. You have this Bob star that conducts many executions concurrently. And you have on the right Alice again, or different Alices, which run independently of each other. And you want to assume that there exists a concurrent adversary that breaks the concurrent input distributability of the protocol, and we want to reduce him to a standalone adversary. This is sort of what we want to show. So we construct a B double star that violates the standalone. And sorry, before that, I didn't specify what the picture means here. So by concurrent input distributability, we mean that for any two possible input sequences on the left, sort of, the pairs view an implicit input as generated by the experiments are indistinguishable. So we want to construct a standalone prover. And the way you do it is actually pretty standard. It's not so advanced. It's using a hybrid argument. You take a hybrid of the two sequences, of the green and the red one. And it all reduces to distinguish in a single execution whether we use the green or the end input. And to make this execution go through, we'll have to simulate the zero knowledge calls, the zero knowledge of the calls, so the non-malleable zero knowledge protocol internally. We'll have to cheat, sort of. And this is sort of where the provable determinism comes into play, because you're going to be having to rewind. And you want the messages to be fixed and not depend on these rewindings. And so we need to simulate on the left. We need to extract the implicit inputs on the right, because otherwise we have we have nothing to feed to the distinguisher if we don't extract anything on the right to the concurrent distinguisher of the concurrent input indistinguishability. And I think that's about it at the high level. Just to summarize, I prepared a table comparing between the notions. And summarizing what we've been talking about in the beginning, I don't think it's funny. So we're talking about meaningfulness, how realistic it is, and how reasonable is the assumption. Here we have the standalone definition, the UC-like definitions. Here we have super polynomial time simulation. This is the Barak-Sahai solution, and here is the potential that the super polynomial time simulation has. And this is what we achieve in this work. So in terms of meaningfulness, standalone is meaningful and reasonable, but not realistic. UC is meaningful, realistic, but not reasonable. super polynomial time simulation. The specific solution given by Barak-Sahai, it's meaningful to the extent of the modulo the functionality to your computing. It's a realistic modulo the security parameters, that they have to be very tight with each other. And the assumption is readable modulo that you believe that not only factoring is hard, but it's also hard for sub-exponential time. The potential that we have is that we'll have a meaningful star definition, but very good in terms of realistic and how reasonable it is. This is still open, as far as I know. Would be very nice to achieve. What we get in this world is maybe meaningful double star, because you might doubt how meaningful it is, even though I try to argue that it's not totally not meaningful. The adversary is realistic and the assumption is reasonable. So I just want to summarize. So simulation seems to have hit the wall. We've seen that. And maybe it's time to reflect and look back, and maybe the original solutions have made us too ambitious. We saw that we could achieve everything in a standalone. We hope that we could achieve it also in the concurrent setting. Maybe we should step back a little bit. This is what we've been doing, and give up in the meaningfulness of the definition. It's like, so people got spoiled. Okay, it's not funny. People got spoiled. They expect to get, everything for free. You know, it's impossible.
Although it's funny when you say it's not funny.
It's only funny when you say it with a straight face.
So here are the relaxation. We talked about them. And that's it. Thank you very much.